This is Central Time. If you're a homeowner who's already received a notice about your property tax bills, there's a good chance you saw a bit of a climb from last year. And you're not alone. According to a new report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum, the average gross property tax bills are going up by the largest amount since the Great Recession. But hold on. Some state-funded tax credits, which are also going to be bigger in the next year, should help soften the impact of these higher taxes. We're going to get into all that and how it works, where the money's going, and why things may look different depending on where you live. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you? Did you already see your property tax bill this time around? What questions do you have? Does it make sense to you? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jason Stein is Research Director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Jason, welcome back to Central Time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Let's start, first of all, looking at the main number you're looking at here, the gross property tax. What do we mean by that phrase?
So essentially, what is levied by each local government, your school district, city, county, tech college, that amount is supplemented by state property tax credits. And those actually lower the net bills that homeowners and business owners pay. But the data that we look at looks at the overall gross levy before that those state credits are applied. So those are the main numbers that we're talking about. And we can also talk about what the net bills will look like.
Right. So when people look at that number that they get in the mail, say, here's how much property tax you owe, and we'll get into what's offsetting that in a bit. What are the trends? What are we seeing going on average around the state?
Okay. So let's just start with the gross amounts before the tax credit gets subtracted. So school levies, K-12 school districts, their property taxes are going up about 5.4% this year. That's the most since 2009. Tech college levies will rise by 4.9%, excuse me, the most since 2008. And county taxes are going to rise by 2.6%, which is, you know, a little more than typical, but sort of in the range. Altogether, we think the gross property tax levies, once we put in some guesswork for municipalities, will increase by 4.5% or 5%. But there are these credits that the state has kicked in the state budget. So, you know, what the net increase for homeowners on a statewide basis will be is something like 2.5% to 3%, something.
Yeah. So let's talk about those credits now. Talk about how they were implemented in the state budget and when people will see the impact of that showing up.
Sure. Absolutely. So there's one main type of state credit. We'll just talk about it. It's called the school levy tax credit. It's called that because it is divided up around the state to different communities based on how much they pay in school property taxes. But it's again, money that goes to lower taxpayers' bills. It's not money. It's not additional money that school districts can spend. It does tend to go more toward areas and communities with high property values. So it has less of an effect in communities with low property values. So, you know, that's what's, changing this year. That credit is going up by $255 million or about 27%. So it's a pretty significant increase here this December.
Now, a big starting point coming into this budget cycle, Jason, and this is something I think you and I have talked about in the past, was these local units of government, or the retirement about counties or municipalities or school districts, a sense that they needed more money, whether that was shared revenue from the state or property tax money. Can you talk about what's been driving that overall need that's at the basis of so many of our financial conversations over the last couple of years?
Absolutely. Well, there's been high inflation. And that has, and in addition to that, there has been high rates of turnover for all workers, including public workers at the local level, like teachers and police officers and employees like that. And so, you know, we have seen some significant wage increases for teachers after many years of lagging inflation. You know, this year, You're seeing some school districts like Madison, Milwaukee increase base wages for teachers by as much as 8%. So that obviously has a significant impact on their budgets. And one thing that they're turning to is property tax increases. There has been an increase in both state aid to schools as well as cities and villages and towns and counties. But, you know, despite that, there's also just been, you know, a rise in their costs. And so you're seeing, you know, these local taxes go up because in Wisconsin, property taxes are the main source of local funding for basically every public service, you know, that's delivered at the local level.
We're talking about the latest news on property taxes in Wisconsin with Jason Stein, Research Director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. We're breaking down a new report from the group looking at how property taxes are increasing on average around the state and a state tax credit that should balance that out at least some. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about how this works and what it means for you and your community? Did you feel sticker shock opening up a property tax bill this year? Do you work at one of these local units of government or a school district? Are you seeing some of these financial crunch issues over the last bunch of years? Do you think things are going to look better with increased state aid and boosting the property tax? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about changes in the latest round of Wisconsin property taxes with Jason Stein, Research Director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. You can join in if you have a property tax question at 800-642-1234. If you want to understand where the money goes, how these rates are set, why they may vary from place to place, join in at 800-642-1234. Jason, the tax rate for property taxes is part of the story. Another part is the assessments, the property values, which in many communities around, not just Wisconsin, around the country are going up. How much does that play into the number people end up looking at when that mail comes?
That's a very important portion of it. This is the ultimate your mileage may vary issue. And so, you know, it's going to depend on things, what your bill, what happens with, you know, an individual bill is going to depend on, you know, with property values rising very quickly. Many communities got behind in doing assessments. And so the assessed values really lagged market values. And as local officials get their assessments caught up, you know, some of your listeners may be really benefited by that because even though their assessment goes up, their neighbors or other people in their community, their assessment goes up by even more. Or it might be the opposite where they're actually hurt by that. You know, other factors would include whether or not your local school district has had a referendum succeed. You know, that plays a major issue on whether school taxes go, how much school taxes go up by, and K-12 property taxes are the biggest chunk of the overall tax bill. So, you know, there's a lot of individual community specific and even neighborhood specific issues that help to determine what's going to happen with an individual's bill. And, you know, to some degree, when we're talking about statewide averages, they aren't always going to reflect this.
Now, one concern, I think, as we were having the whole debate over state support for local governments was, you know, with tight times over the last bunch of years, some communities, some governments, some school districts may have been putting off some of the bigger expenses, renovations, maintenance, capital improvements, that sort of thing. Is that a factor in what we're seeing now?
Well, certainly, capital referenda, you know, if a technical college or school district in your area has done a referendum like that and had it succeed to, you know, do a major building project, then that can absolutely, you know, affect property taxes. You know, for example, Moraine Park Technical College in Fond du Lac passed a capital referendum in 2022 that's contributing to, you know, a very significant levy increase there of 38%. So, you know, that can certainly play a role. It would typically not be anything as dramatic as that, but it can certainly be a factor.
And can you talk about how much things might vary from county to county, school district to school district, in terms of how they approach this year in setting their property tax rates? In some places, they might actually go down a bit. In some, they're going up. What drives that amount of variety?
Absolutely. I can give you a couple examples from our two biggest communities in the state. So, the Madison Metropolitan School District, which has the largest property tax levy of any school district in the state, is going to increase it by about 8%. Whereas the Milwaukee Public Schools property tax levy will actually tick down just slightly. I mean, it's essentially flat. So that's a really stark contrast between those two school districts. And then if you look at Dane County, Dane County has a property tax levy increase of 13.6%, which is one of the highest of the 72 counties in the state. And then Milwaukee County is actually decreasing its property tax levy by 6.8%. And the unique thing that's happening in Milwaukee County is, as some of your listeners will remember, as over the summer, lawmakers and Governor Evers approved a sales tax increase for Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee. So for Milwaukee County, it's equal to 0.4%. And that increase in the sales tax will actually, some of that revenue will be used to lower property taxes.
As we mentioned, go ahead, Jason.
No, go right ahead. Just many local factors. That's all.
Now, there's long-running debates and arguments over what balance of taxes to have, property, income, sales taxes. Different states around the country approach these things differently. Is there a sense after these changes to state aid for local government and revamping this credit to balance out the property tax, do you get a sense that we're done arguing about these things in Wisconsin for a few budget cycles, or is this just going to be in, a year and a half now, right back on the table, and we're going to be retweaking everything?
I mean, it's definitely the case that the property tax burden in Wisconsin has fallen a lot over the past generation. So it takes, property taxes take up a much smaller share of personal income in Wisconsin than they did a generation ago. But I don't think we're done arguing about them. Part of it, the reason is, it's just very salient. It's a bill that comes once a year. Many of us pay it in a one-time check to our local government. And so therefore, it really stands out to us. And we remember that number. Many other states, local governments make a greater use of sales taxes to fund their operations than in Wisconsin. And, sales taxes are not as easily perceived. We're not always looking at the bill and keeping a running tally in our mind of what we're up to in sales taxes. So I think that's probably one reason why we will continue to debate this issue and have it in public life for many years to come.
Jason, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Oh, my pleasure. Have a good weekend.
You too. That's Jason Stein, Research Director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. He talked to us today about their new report looking at how the average for gross property taxes in Wisconsin is increasing this time around and how some state tax credits will help bring that amount ultimately back down. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, our guest reads lots and lots of obituaries and shares lessons we can learn by reading about the lives of those who have passed. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio year-end member drive. Sean Johnson is with me. Your support is vital to all the news, talk, and entertainment here on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the largest source of funding. Take just a few minutes right now on the last day of this drive to support the essential service you count on with your year-end gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this hour, we have a goal of 20 gifts. Thanks if you've already given.
If you haven't, join in now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift makes the news, talk, and music you value possible.
And whether it's a three-minute news update or a 60-minute talk show, you hear about the topics that affect your life, and you hear about them on Wisconsin Public Radio. Listeners like you help pay for the quality programs you hear every day, so give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 2552.
We don't expect any one or even 100 listeners to carry the costs of this program. In fact, there's an advantage to having the bulk of funding for WPR programs spread out over thousands of donors.
When we have a wide base of support, it makes for a more stable organization. It makes us strong, makes us independent. So join in, become a member. Your gift might be $100 or it might be $10 a month. You decide the amount and donation method that's best for you, and then give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Introducing the limited edition WPR Sticker Pack, a collection of seven stunning stickers featuring Wisconsin's most iconic landmarks, from the shores of Lake Michigan to the bluffs in the Driftless area. Bring a piece of Wisconsin's natural beauty with you wherever you go when you give $8 a month or more for the WPR programs you value. Just like our state's natural landscapes, WPR is a treasured resource that keeps all of us informed and connected. Your generosity fuels the news, conversation, and entertainment that we all rely on. This sticker collection is our way of saying thank you and helping you add a touch of Wisconsin and WPR pride to your laptop, water bottle, bike helmet, and more. It's only available today, so make your gift of $8 a month or more now. Here's how.
Make that gift at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Central Time, Rob Ferret here with Sean Johnson. And the last day of the last member drive of the year, the last hour and a half of the last member drive of the year, WPR's essential service is available to you and your community thanks to your support. Your gift of $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, makes a difference for our entire community.
As we look ahead to 2024, we're so grateful that Wisconsin Public Radio has such strong listener support. One gift at a time, listeners provide our largest source of funding. If you haven't given yet this year, now's the time. And if you have given this year, we appreciate your extra year-end gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Our year-end member drive ends at 6 o'clock. That still leaves you time, but not a lot, to cast your vote in favor of Wisconsin Public Radio. Take just a couple of minutes to make your gift right now.
Thank you if you've already contributed, and thank you to our ongoing sustaining members. If you haven't given yet, take this opportunity right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This hour, we have a goal of 20 gifts. Thank you so much if you've already given. If you haven't, join in now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You make Wisconsin Public Radio possible when you give.
Support WPR and showcase your love for Wisconsin with the WPR Sticker Pack. It's only available today with your gift of $8 a month or more. Ask for yours now and add some WPR and Wisconsin pride to all your belongings at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you are a sustaining member, thank you so much. Make today the day you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Michael in West Salem says, "I am a firm believer of balanced news and stories. WPR delivers this, especially in divisive times. Thank you, WPR." Thank you, Michael, so much. We really appreciate that.
Thank you so much for the gift, Michael, and the kind words. How about you? How much do you count on Wisconsin Public Radio? How much do you listen? What does it mean to you? Do you start conversations with stuff you heard here on Wisconsin Public Radio? We're glad to be that valuable to you, and I want you to know you are that valuable to us because we count on you to help pay for all of that. Make your very important gift right now. You can do it online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552, and thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. When was the last time you read an obituary? How about an obituary of someone you didn't even know? For many people, the answer to that last question might be never. But our next guest says that we can learn a lot about how to live by reading the life story of those who have died in the words of the people who love them, or in some cases, in their own words. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever had to write an obituary for someone? What was that experience like? What did you learn about them or yourself while writing it? What would you want to be included in your own obituary? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mary McGreevy is a Minnesota-based video producer and creator of the page Tips from Dead People on TikTok. She's an alumnus of UW-Madison, by the way. Mary, welcome to Central Time.
Happy to be here.
Where did your fascination with obituaries come from?
I grew up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and for a brief time, my mother, who was a journalist, was the obituary writer for our hometown paper, the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. So it was on my mind from a very young age, and I was always interested in nonfiction story. You might even just call it gossip. I think if I had been a kid at the time when things like The Moth and Humans of New York were around, I would have been all in. But instead, I had obituaries.
And so you read them for years and years. When did it occur to you that, hey, wait a minute, there's something here that's worth sharing and thinking about?
Well, I have always been kind of a wanderer. My career path has not been a straight line, like a lot of people. And I've always been so curious about the choices that people make and whether that contributes to what we would all consider the good life. And through these obituaries, I'm always kind of reflecting on, well, this person has what we are all taught that people should want, like a big resume, a big car, a big house, a big bank account. And yet there isn't joy or love in this. And on the other hand, sometimes I would read obituaries that were just all tiny details and had nothing to do with a person's resume or their achievements. And yet you could tell that that person was bursting with love and had great family connections and just, you know, had a hell of a good time in life. And so those kinds of things really, really stuck with me. I guess I'm just a quester. I'm always thinking about those things. And I've toted a bunch of meaningful obituaries to me of people that I've never met around to all the cities that I've lived in. And it wasn't until recently that I started thinking, I wonder if there's like a creative project that I could do with this, that I could share with people, because truly these obituaries have guided me. I've some tips about life have floated to the top about reading through reading all these obituaries. And I just thought, maybe no one will listen, maybe no one will care, but maybe I can find a platform where I can share some of these or excerpts of some of these and see what people say. And that's how, just on a lark, I created Tips from Dead People, and it's created this really impressive and interesting and kind and fun community on TikTok.
What leads you to say, yes, I'm going to share this obituary on TikTok versus another one?
Initially, I just went through some of the ones that I had collected over the years. And to me, if an obituary goes beyond what we all think of as the template for a standard obituary, which I consider mostly airbrushed and sterile, if an obituary goes beyond that in some way, it can be short, it can be long, it can be funny, it can be brutally honest, it doesn't really matter. But if there's something in there that makes me think about my own choices, then I put that in on the list of obituaries that I want to share. And the thing about this TikTok account is that after I started reading these and sharing these on TikTok, all of a sudden more people started joining, and all of a sudden there's 65,000 followers and a million views and all that kind of stuff. Then people started sending me the obituaries that they've written or the ones that are meaningful to them. So at this point, I have a really long list, and I love that. It's an amazingly great problem to have. So now it's just a matter of reading through all of these and deciding what strikes me on a particular day. If there's something helpful. You know, I know sometimes people have a hard time processing, you know, what is the good life for them. And if I can, in a light and sensitive way, help with that, that's the one that I'm going to choose for that day.
Talking to Mary McGreevy, creator of the Tips from Dead People TikTok feature. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Mary, I think you've got a couple examples of obituaries that did offer some of those insights about what a good life is. Could you share a couple with us?
Sure. So one thing that's been really interesting for me is when people are refreshingly honest. If you look at most obituaries, whether it's the newspaper or free obituary sites or obituaries on funeral home or cremation place sites, that they're often following this very standard template that you find mm-hmm. when you Google how to write an obituary, which I do not recommend doing. And it feels like people are complicated, but you don't often get to hear about those complications in an obituary. So this one really struck a nerve with my followers. It's about a woman named Jane, and it starts like this. Noted eccentric, road warrior, artist, collector of many books, if not always reader of them, sun dancer, Catholic, hoarder of odd and beautiful things, well-known sweet tooth, and beloved, if often nettlesome, mother, Jane Kane, aged 87, passed away in Missoula on May 15th, 2023. Now that's an opening paragraph, right? And it goes on to talk about a lot of interesting things in her life. But picking up here, it says, raised in the shadow of the 1950s, Jane was in near constant rebellion against the norms of that era for women. A great and unconscious beauty, Jane initially attempted to navigate those rules by conforming. She quickly moved from her Jackie O period into her Whole Earth catalog era. A true bohemian, often, but not always, bordering on the lunatic, Jane fiercely loved, but could not always care for her family. She taught her seven children fearlessness and a wide-ranging cultural competency. She was not always equally careful in providing meals, on-time attendance, personal discipline, or recognition of the individuality of each of her children. And then it goes on a little bit longer, but the last line, it says, we, her family, invite one and all to celebrate Jane's singular and beautiful life as she passes beyond her era on earth. We loved and cherished her despite and because of it all. And so to me, that is an excellent example of you can be an imperfect parent. You can be a person that has a scattered career path. You can, you know, have addiction or estrangement in your life. And still, there is a good story to tell about your life. And that story is worth telling.
And obviously a striking thing there. Yes, we heard some of the quirky stuff and the lovable stuff about this person. But also some things that might not be seen as that flattering. How often do you run across that? Because the instinct, I think, is going to be, yeah, this isn't the time for the bad stuff.
It is the instinct because that's what we've all been taught. Mm-hmm. And that's the social expectation. That's the etiquette around obituaries. But when you see an obituary go viral, and I don't care if obituaries go viral. I mean, that's awesome when it does. But that's not the most particularly interesting thing. But when those obituaries do go viral, it's either because they're delightfully detailed or because they're brutally honest and it kind of shocks people. But it's possible to tell that complicated story about people. You are the only you that will ever exist, as are the people in your life. And I do believe that we all benefit as a society when those complicated stories are told. Again, short, long, funny, serious, it doesn't really matter to me. But to get that story out there is the important thing.
A very striking thing to me is that some people write their own obituaries or their own version of them, in some cases in the midst of terminal illness. Can you talk about that idea of telling our own story?
I think it's wonderful, and I completely advocate for that if it's something that you're interested in doing. So I'm not a scientist. I don't have a therapy degree of any kind, but it's my wholehearted belief through all this anecdotal evidence that when a story is well told, and when you're terminally ill and you know a story is going to be well told about your life, that makes for a better death. And it certainly makes for a better grief process for the people that are left, if they know that story is well and accurately told about the person. There's a self-written obituary by another woman named Jane. And here's a couple excerpts from this, which I think is, you know, something, of course, that I'm saving and I think is really, really lovely. It starts, one of the few advantages of dying from grade 3, stage 3C endometrial cancer, recurrent and metastasized to the liver and abdomen, is that you have time to write your own obituary. The other advantages are no longer bothering with sunscreen and no longer worrying about your cholesterol. She goes on to talk about her professional life. And then toward the end, she says, I was given the gift of life and now I have to give it back. This is hard, but I was a lucky woman who led a lucky existence. And for this, I am grateful. I first got sick in January 2010 when the cancer recurred last year and was terminal. I decided to be joyful about having had a full life rather than sad about having to die. Amazingly, this outlook worked for me. Well, you know, most of the time. Meditation and the study of Buddhist philosophy also helped me accept that I could not change. At any rate, I am at peace. And on that upbeat note, I take my mortal leave of this rollicking, revolving world. This sun, that moon, that walk around Green Lake, that stroll through the Pike Place Market, the memory of a child's hand and mind. Beautiful day, happy to have been here.
Mary, I imagine that having read self-written obituaries like that and so many others, it's got to inform how you think about life and approach life. Does it? How so, if so?
It absolutely does. Every day it informs how I think about life. I think some of the biggest things that I've taken away from this whole creative endeavor, which I just adore, I mean, I'm not really an artistic person. I should just put that out there. I'm not an artist. So to call myself creative is kind of funny. I'm more of a crossword puzzle kind of person. But I do feel like this endeavor of excavating really good and interesting obituaries is creative for me. But the tips that have risen to the top for me is, number one, the little things in life are really the big things. Like I mentioned before, achievements, resumes, all that kind of thing. Those are worthy goals to have, but it doesn't necessarily equate to the good life. The things about your travels, your food, your pranks, the failures that you've overcome, all those things, that makes for a better story, in my opinion. Second, if you think one failure in your life is going to define you, you can think again. There are countless obituaries that I've read where people have had addiction or job loss or divorce or any of these kinds of things that they might consider a failure. And yet there are many, many chapters left in their life, even to the very end of a, you know, an old person. And lastly, humor goes a long way to bringing people together in tough times. And I live by that every day. And I see it played out in these obituaries. When you can be light and tell very detailed, witty, irreverent things, I think it brings people together. So, and lastly, in terms of telling my own story, imperfection is A-okay. Like I always say, this doesn't have to be a certain thing. There should be no templates. It's really a huge shame that that obituaries are so expensive in newspapers. I think that's kind of an outrage. And I prefer it when people have the room and the space to tell an imperfect story about an imperfect person.
Mary, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for sharing this with us today.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
That's Mary McGreevy, Minnesota-based video producer, creator of the page Tips from Dead People on TikTok. She joined us to share life lessons she's learned from reading lots and lots of obituaries over the years.